From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Yeah, thanks very much, Ollie. Interesting stories today with white nationalism being banned by Facebook. I don't have any time for white nationalism. But banning people from expressing their opinions on Facebook, it's going down a very dangerous road, isn't it? On the other hand, the far right is having a field day with the migrants hijacking the tanker. Right. Ah, tis mad, this identitarian identity politics world we live in. Tis mad, I tells you. Welcome to Thursday's programme.
Richie Allen.
It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yes, it is you and I today, just you and I, have got an hour of news analysis, a roundup of the big stories of the day, and I hope you will chat with me through the medium of Twitter, the usual Twitter handle. I had planned on doing a phone-in show today, that was all systems go, but as usual, I had agreed to a prior engagement with the future Mrs. Allen, and, well, I'd forgotten all about it. Welcome to the programme. Yeah, I don't write things down, you see. And this, if my old boss, Billy McCarthy, rest in peace, was alive today, he would find that very amusing. Because back in the day when I was producing talk radio for WLRFM with a fantastic team and a great presenter, I was criticised regularly for my inability to make notes and to keep a diary. This is true. And I didn't need to because I've got a memory like an elephant. I do. I very rarely, if ever, he says, having forgotten something that was coming up this week. But what it is I used to have a memory like an elephant then. There you go. That's more honest, isn't it? And I wouldn't forget anything. But it drove my presenter mad. Mad, I tells you. Because it worried him greatly, because he was on air and felt that it would happen eventually that I would forget something and he would be stranded on a live radio programme. But it never happened because my memory is excellent. And if I booked somebody in to do a radio show in 3 weeks' time, I would remember it. The time, the date, the whole shebang and all of that. But I was sent to do a time management course against my will. Didn't want to do it. Threw a hissy fit, but did it anyway. And came back and said all the right things. Yeah, it was really, really good and I learned a lot. And then I just carried on doing what I'd always done. But yeah, I've got a commitment later on this evening, a personal commitment. It's to do with it. It's a works do thing. So the phone-in show is going to have to wait for another day, but we'll organise it sooner rather than later. I've got a thoroughly produced, full and packed hour of news analysis for you right now. So let's get on with it then. And as I said already, please do tweet the programme with any comments of your own. Right, here we go. What we start off with. Loads to get into, by the way. Video game addiction, we're going to get into a bit of that. Huawei, the Chinese firm, we'll get into a bit of that as well. Bit of French wine, will we? We might get into a bit of French wine. We might. Child poverty, for sure. It's a varied mix of stories today. I'm going to try and keep the Brexit stuff to a minimum for you today. There's also a very interesting story coming out of the Metropolitan Police about online child sex abuse, which is kind of worrying. A story that suggests the police don't have a handle on it at all. And lots more we can talk about in the hour. It might run over an hour. It might do. And if it does, it does. Now, dear listener, all joking aside, right? Even though I knew that the UK would never leave the European Union, I imagined that there was a 0.00001% chance that on this particular programme, you and me would be drinking champagne today. Well, Prosecco then. All right then, Cava. All right, Buckfast. £2.99 in Asda. Oh Christ, let's be honest. Buckfast! We would have had a glass of Buckfast today. Why should we be quaffing Buckfast? Did you ever do that, Buckfast? If I say knacker drink, my Irish listeners will laugh. Some of them, maybe a bit snowflakey, might think that knacker is a derogatory and therefore offensive term. Knacker drinking is something you do when you're young and you're not supposed to drink, and you go in a field and you drink cheap booze like Buckfast. We all did it. We should be quaffing Buckfast together now, you and I, and getting pissed as farts, because we should be leaving the European Union tomorrow. Tomorrow we should be, but we're not. Ah well, we'll talk about that in a few minutes, but not for long. Promise you, 7 or 8 minutes of Brexit stuff, and I'll give you a heads up so you can leave the room and then come back. I don't care. Syria's ambassador to the United Nations, a man called Bashar Jafari. He's a funny lad, got a wicked sense of humour, I think. He's been at the United Nations talking about Donald Trump and Trump's assertion that Israel is the rightful owner of the Golan Heights. Well, Bashar Jafari, speaking at the United Nations, suggested to the United States that it give North Carolina and South Carolina to Israel rather than giving land or apportioning land that it doesn't in fact own. It's quite funny. In the stark rebuke to the US at the Council, the Security Council meeting yesterday, Jafari said that the Trump administration exists only to do the bidding of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Jafari went on to say that Trump does nothing else other than curry favour with the Israeli lobby in the United States. Good for him. Good for him. He went on to say, did Bashar Jafari, don't be misguided by thinking that one day this land, the Golan Heights, will be yours due to hypocrisy or due to being a pawn in the electoral game where you bring each other support so the Israelis can succeed in their elections and the Americans can get support from Israeli lobbying groups in America. Jafari said the Golan Heights are ours and they always will be. If you don't know what the Golan Heights are, it's land seized illegally by Israel during the 1967 Six-Day War. And in 1981, Israel annexed it. But the international community has never supported Israel's assertion that the land is theirs. Donald Trump, what a puppet. Interestingly enough, Trump yesterday met with the Venezuelan traitor Juan Guaido. Well, he didn't. He actually met with Juan Guaido's wife at the White House. He had a formal meeting with the wife of Juan Guaido at the White House. Don't read anything into it. Trump prefers his women much, much younger. I'm not going to say it. So, while he was sitting in the Oval Office with Juan Guaido's wife, RT was very quick, this is Russia Today, was very quick to pick up on a Freudian slip by Donald Trump, because in the press briefing, sitting alongside Guaido's wife, Trump labelled Venezuela as a company, so he did.
The potential of Venezuela, if done properly and with democracy, would be incredible. It was one of the richest companies, certainly, and now it's one of the poorest countries of the world.
A slip of the tongue, for sure, but could it be a Freudian one? Well, he seems to have appointed Venezuela's new CEO a long time ago. I mean, what else could Juan Guaido be in this? I mean, as an owner, Trump would want a man he can trust running this venture. It has been an expensive one, and the US plans to invest more into it.
Yeah.
The budget also would continue democracy assistance for Venezuela.
Democracy assistance for Venezuela. That was a line from a statement from the United States Agency for International Development, USAID, to provide democracy assistance for Venezuela. What does that mean? Democracy assistance.
America, fuck yeah. Coming again to save the motherfucking day.
To save the mother trucking day, yeah, America. So democracy assistance. By the way, the reporter for RT is a man called, what's his name again, get it right, Igor Zhdanov. He's very good, Igor Zhdanov. Yeah. It was a Freudian slip by Trump. That's how Trump's puppet masters see Venezuela. Of course, it's far deeper. than just stealing the oil and the other natural resources there. But that's a part of it too. So the company thing was a Freudian slip. Let's provide democracy assistance for Venezuela, eh? Yeah. Trump's neocon Zionist masters, by the way, are raging. Raging. Why are they raging? Because Russia sent a plane full of military officers and advisors to Caracas. So Trump did what Trump does. The moronic goon just began making threats about what the United States might do if Russia's probably 20 or 50 or 100, I don't know how many it is, but some say 200 advisors don't leave the country. What a load of nonsense. And to Trump supporters, I say, QAnon, eh? Trump taking on the deep state, eh? Stings like a bitch, doesn't it? You MAGA baseball cap wearing mother truckers. Stings like a bitch. But you know what? It's foolish, it's childish, it's worthless, and it's unhelpful to point the finger and laugh at people. Do you know why? Because we were all fooled. By Trump? No. No, not by Trump, but by others over the years. By many others. I was fooled many a time by a eloquent, socialist-claiming man or woman whom I believed would make a difference if they were elected to office. So come in out of the cold, Trump supporters. No shame in being wrong. We were all wrong at one time or another. Some of us are still wrong all the time. Admit that Donald is a puppet and come and join us. Join us. Join with us. They're all puppets. The burn. Feel the burn. Puppet. Obama. Puppet. Bill O'Clinton and his child trafficking wife. Puppet. Catweasel Jezza Corbyn. Puppet. John McDonnell. Puppet. They all serve the same masters. Every one of them. Don't be ashamed of it. Don't dig your head further into sand and become stubborn and fight people. Admit it. It's like the biggest weight in the world being lifted off your shoulders. I got it wrong. He is a neocon Zionist controlled puppet. No problem. It's not your fault. We all get it wrong. It's 5:15 and you are with the Richie Allen Show live on Fab Radio 2. Tune in Radio Trigger Warning. .tv and my website. Well, big pharma, big pharma, big pharmaceutical companies. Here's a story in the BBC, and this is genuine. Thought it was a joke, but it's not. It's genuine. Are you feeling overwhelmed by the existential challenge of climate change? You're not alone. And there's a tablet for that. Eco-anxiety. How to spot it and what to do about it. Do you suffer from eco-anxiety, do you? Are you worried about climate change? It's an academic paper that has gone viral. It's been downloaded hundreds of thousands of times, and it talks about the young Swedish girl who started the school strikes for climate change, Greta Thunberg. Little bastard school children, bastards, taking days off school to protest against climate change, the little bollockses. That's all they are. They know nothing. God love them. But then I knew less than they do when I was their age. So let's be fair about it. Anxiety disorders and eco-anxiety. Psychology Today has defined eco-anxiety as a fairly recent psychological disorder afflicting an increasing number of individuals who worry about the environmental crisis. Yeah. Apparently, more than 1 in 10 British adults experience anxiety disorder. Not eco-anxiety now, but anxiety disorder. At one time or another during their life. That's why we're all on tablets. So, 1 in 10 British adults have some sort of anxiety disorder. But now, eco-anxiety is coming in. And Susan Clayton from the College of Wooster, Ohio, has written a report on this mental health and our changing climate. A significant proportion of people are experiencing stress and worry about the potential impacts of climate change, and this level of worry is increasing, says Susan Clayton, the College of Wooster, Ohio. Of course, Susan's paper wasn't sponsored in any way by any of the pharmaceutical giants. It actually was. And Big Pharma already has a pill for that. It's called Eco-Ease. 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 That's Eco-Ease. Take it 3 times a day, keeps you calm and stops you worrying about climate change. Side effects include possibly taking automatic weapons into a public place and killing loads of people. EcoEase will be with you soon. You won't need to get a prescription from a doctor. 18 and a half minutes past five. This is the Richie Allen Show. And you thought this was a professionally produced and presented news radio show, didn't you? EcoEase. Members of Parliament might vote tomorrow on Theresa May's withdrawal bill. They might not. Nobody has a Scooby-Doo. What's going on? Ah, there's breaking news. There's breaking news. Tomorrow, members of Parliament will be asked to vote again, but only on part of the deal that Theresa May negotiated with the European Union. So members of Parliament have just been informed of this. They will vote on the withdrawal agreement negotiated with the European Union, which covers the divorce bill, citizens' rights and the Irish backstop. But the part about the political declaration, which covers the UK's future relationship with the European Union, that part will not be put to the vote. If MPs back Theresa May tomorrow, the government says the UK will leave the EU on May 22nd. Of course it won't, of course. Of course it won't leave the European Union. So that's it then. There will be a vote tomorrow on the withdrawal agreement, but not on the political declaration. So it's not going to pass because Labour has said, in the guise of Keir Starmer, who's the shadow Brexit secretary, Labour has said that it's ridiculous because the withdrawal agreement and the political declaration are all part of this of the same negotiated package. Starmer said you can't separate them because separating them would mean leaving the European Union with no idea where we are heading. We won't vote for that. So breaking news as I speak with you. MPs will vote again on Brexit tomorrow, but only on part of the deal negotiated with the European Union. It's ridiculous, this nonsense, isn't it? The Speaker of the House, John Bercow, said it was a new motion and complied with his previous ruling that he wouldn't allow a third vote on what was substantially the same motion. So there will be a vote tomorrow. May is widely expected to lose it tomorrow anyway. All right. Fun and games today, dear listener. Fun and games today. And I do mean fun and games. We will have the fun in a minute. And I think you will laugh your collective little backsides off when you hear some of the stuff that went on today in a minute. Yesterday, 8 indicative votes were defeated. You might remember there were 8 propositions put to MPs yesterday, 8 propositions on the way forward. They were all knocked down. Margaret Beckett's second referendum vote was defeated, but not by very much. Lord Adonis, Labour peer, and Bill Cash were on Sky News this afternoon. Lord Adonis, eh? Imagine how fucked up we are when we have to listen to people like Lord Adonis. It's like being back in the Stone Age, isn't it? Lord Adonis. Imagine how bad things are when you're talking about someone like Lord Adonis. Imagine how bad things are that an Irish guy is referring to Lord Adonis. Michael Collins must be spinning in his grave. Anyway, this is Lord Adonis on the second referendum.
Well, it's true that we don't know where we're going in that the Prime Minister still hasn't said what motion she's going to table tomorrow, but it looks as if she's going to table her deal again for the third time. You've got Bill Cash on this programme with me, and it'd be interesting to ask him whether he's voting for it, because if he and his colleagues aren't voting for it on the right of the Conservative Party, then it won't go through. And then on Monday, Parliament considers again the alternative options. Now, when you said that there wasn't a majority for a referendum, you're correct. There was a majority against. But the single highest vote that there's been now for any proposition in this Brexit process is the second referendum, which got a much higher vote than Theresa May's deal got. And it's only 27 votes short of getting a majority. So the momentum now is towards the second referendum. I don't think there's any desire in Parliament on any side now to have a whole new negotiation. I mean, the idea of putting the country through the gruesome process we've gone through in the last last 2.5 years, I think, is unthinkable. So by a process of elimination, I think we are getting to the second referendum, but whether it will happen while Theresa May is still Prime Minister or whether it will be under her predecessor, who, of course, remember, will be the third Conservative Prime Minister who's had to grapple with Brexit, time will tell.
Yeah, second referendum after a general election is a strong possibility as well. May announced yesterday that that her time is effectively up, that she would go if her deal got through. But whether her deal gets through or not, she's going to go in the next few weeks. So a general election is looking very likely. There will be no Brexit. Now, Bill Cash is a staunch Eurosceptic. And Cash explains that unlike Boris Johnson and Rees Mogg of the European Research Group, who have changed their minds and said they would vote for May's deal, staunch Eurosceptic Bill Cash, and I like old Bill Cash. Cash explains that he won't vote for May tomorrow, and then he explains very well why it's very, very bad, and everybody should hear this and understand it.
Oh, I'm definitely voting against the withdrawal agreement. I've set out my case in the House of Commons and in articles I've written in the Telegraph and all sorts of newspapers, and I've said it many times, and why. Very simply, the backstop completely undermines the constitutional status of Northern Ireland, which is why the DUP are not prepared to accept the withdrawal agreement either. But on top of that, there is an issue of control over laws. Prime Minister quite clearly stated at Lancaster House, and she was right at that time, saying that we will never truly leave the European Union unless we regain control of our laws. I'm chairman of the European Scrutiny Committee. All the laws that come out of the European Union pass through our hands. And basically, Article 4 of this withdrawal agreement enables directs that under that withdrawal agreement, laws which are made in the Council of Ministers behind closed doors without a transcript by a qualified majority voting of 27 other countries with us not there, will in fact, and by accelerated procedures in some cases, which could be very, very damaging to the to the United Kingdom, they go through, and that is a complete loss of control over laws. One last thing, okay, on that, if I may.
Burley is trying to shut him up here.
Okay, on that, if I may. It is the fact that there are procedures which can accelerate the passage of those laws. There is a myth around that it all takes about 5 years for these laws to go through. I've got 200 unclear documents at the moment because in the national interest, these have been held back for a variety of reasons, and they are still in the pipeline. The reality is that these laws which they'll bring in, and Germany and France will dominate already. They call the shots in the European Union, and those laws will put us at the mercy of our competitors. And I don't think British business has woken up to that.
Very important what he just said there. European Scrutiny Committee, they've got about 200 directives from the European Union in their hands at the moment. As it stands, they have some little bit of power, I suppose, or they have some way of stopping that legislation or preventing it or slowing it down. Under May's deal, they wouldn't. They would have no say whatsoever. Just to hear the crux of that again, Bill Cash, this is what the European Union is.
Under that withdrawal agreement, laws which are made in the Council of Ministers, behind closed doors, without a transcript, by a qualified majority voting of 27 other countries, with us not there, will in fact, and by accelerated procedures in some cases, which could be very, very damaging to the to the United Kingdom, they go through, and that is a complete loss of control over laws.
It is, and that's why Burley was interjecting there to shut him up. Not because Burley understands herself, but her producer would be saying, move him on, move him on. Don't dwell on this most central point in terms of why no country should be a member of the European Union anyway. Right? I told you we'd keep this brief. Now it's time for some fun. It's time for some fun. But under May's deal, you've got no say. You're in. It's the Brexit in name only. Bryno, they call it. You're in the European Union, but it's a pretense that you're out. Free movement continues, loss of control of your fishing waters continues, and you're subject to the laws. Anyway, do you want a bit of fun? Do you want some fun? Radio 5 live this morning, shortly after 8 o'clock in the morning. Shortly after 8 a.m. Nicky Campbell, the presenter, lost his fucking mind and should have lost his job. Now, I'm not in favour of anybody losing his or her job. I am a trade unionist. I really am. However detestable I find these radio presenters, I wouldn't see anybody out of work at all. I've heard it all, or I thought I had heard it all. You're going to have to want to clean out your ears because you're not going to believe what you're going to hear. I'm bigging this up, and it's heading for a fall and an anticlimax. There is no anticlimax. Wait till you hear the BBC. You thought the BBC was biased before? Nikki Campbell was introducing Jim Wells of the Democratic Unionist Party. Now, yesterday, the Democratic Unionist Party, the DUP, which props up the Conservative minority government, by the way, through this confidence and supply arrangement. What does that mean again, Richie? Well, Theresa May didn't win enough seats, even though the Conservatives won the most seats at the 2017 election. She didn't win enough to form a majority government. So in order to be able to pass, to basically get her business done in Parliament, for the Conservatives to roll out their manifesto in government, they needed the Democratic Unionist Party MPs to give them a boost in numbers. And they gave them £1 billion for Northern Ireland for doing it, which was rather fishy, old boy, rather fishy. But anyway, fair enough, the DUP, somebody gave me £1 billion and said, listen, will you vote with me? Well, it depends on what the votes are, but you'd have to consider it, wouldn't you? Now, so the DUP yesterday said that they would not back Theresa May's deal. They wouldn't. Fair enough, that's their right to not back it. So BBC Radio 5 Live phoned up Jim Wells of the DUP and gave Nikki Campbell the job of interviewing him. Listen to Campbell introduce Jim Wells. Prepare yourself.
Former Minister in Stormont, good morning to you. Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you all right. How are you this morning?
Not too bad.
Right, do you know what some people are frustrated about? And this is as they say it. And forgive me for my candour. In your party, there's a bunch of people who think that the planet is less than 10,000 years old. There's a bunch of us. They see it. I mean, you yourself have objected to same-sex marriage. It's, you know, it's absolutely not in line with modern Britain, and yet you are holding modern Britain to ransom.
Did you hear that? Every time I hear it, I laugh again. Did you hear what Nikki Campbell, a BBC radio presenter who takes an oath of objectivity, who swears not to opine, to not insert his own opinion into his interviews or into his programmes? It's sacrosanct. Did you hear what he said to a member of the DUP by way of introducing him? It bears repeating.
Right, do you know what some people are frustrated about? And this is as they say it. And forgive me for my candour. In your party, there's a bunch of people who think that the planet is less than 10,000 years old. There's a bunch of us. They see it. I mean, you yourself have objected to same-sex marriage. It's, you know, it's absolutely not in line with modern Britain, and yet you are holding modern Britain to ransom.
People in your party think the Earth is only 10,000 years old and you are against same-sex marriage. What in the name of all the saints and all the sinners has that got to do with the DUP's refusal to support Theresa May in the third meaningful vote? And what's that about modern Britain and same-sex marriage? How does Nikki Campbell know?
Same-sex marriage, it's, you know, it's absolutely not in line with modern Britain, and yet you are holding modern Britain to ransom.
Not favouring same-sex marriage is not in line with modern Britain. How does he know? For example, you know, how does he know? I'm not saying, by the way, that the majority of people in this country have anything against same-sex marriage. I would say the majority couldn't care less. One way or the other. I would also say that the majority who don't care one way or the other also don't care one way or the other if the person living next door to him doesn't agree with same-sex marriage. I thought I'd heard it all. That's quite amazing to me that Nikki Campbell would still be working for the BBC, introducing a man and basically saying to him, aren't you a crazy religious mad bastard who thinks that man was on the earth with the dinosaurs? And you also are against same-sex marriage, and most of Britain would find you kind of repulsive or kind of repugnant. And you're holding up the whole Brexit process. To the absolute credit of Jim Wells, to his absolute credit, and I've got nothing in common with the Democratic Unionist Party, except that we're all human beings sharing this planet together. I'm an Irish Republican, of course. I would disagree with them about Northern Ireland and about, you know, their, about the Union and everything else, but I would disagree with them democratically. And I would have nothing against them personally, not at all. Disgusting behaviour by a BBC presenter paid over £1 million a year. But Jim Wells' response to it, well, I thought was very classy.
No, we're not, Nikki. The reality is that we were approached by the Conservative Party for a confidence to supply agreement, which we entered into to provide stable government. And that has been the case now for over 2 years. And we are simply stating our view on the withdrawal agreement. If others seek to support us, that's fine. But the other thing is, of course, is that a large number of Conservative MPs on previous votes have supported our stance. And indeed, even Jacob Rees-Mogg yesterday said that he saw the DUP as the defenders of the union. So we do have support well beyond Northern Ireland.
Do you want another bribe?
No, make it absolutely clear, Nikki. This is not about...
It's wretched by Campbell, isn't it?
This is not about money. We're not trying to get extra injection of funding into Northern Ireland, even though, of course, that would cover all of the community in the province. No, this is a principled issue. As Boris Johnson told our party conference, if we sign up to the backstop, we become a colony of the European Union.
Yeah, a bit of class, a wee bit of class there from Jim Wells. What I would have done if I was Wells, because he was in his office, or he was in the DUP office at Westminster, I'd have told Nikki to hang on just a minute, and I'd have ran down the stairs out to the BBC tent and given him an old Glaswegian kiss there. But then again, Jim Wells, unbelievable that. There was another round of blame Brexit on the fucking old people today. That's becoming a national sport, that. Blame Brexit on the fucking old people. That should have a theme. That should be a jingle now. I'm going to get a jingle made up. Blame Brexit on the fucking old. Blame Brexit on the fucking old. Because it's the old people's fault. There was another round of it today on the BBC and on Sky News. The useless smelling of wee, incontinent, tea drinking, good morning watching, duck feeding old people. So Nikki Campbell had Tootsie on from London. Tootsie. This is true. You couldn't make it up. Tootsie. This is just after Campbell's absolutely appalling interview with Jim Wells. So we had Tootsie on. Tootsie was just somebody they brought on. Tootsie would have texted in and a BBC producer would have rung up Tootsie. I'm going to keep saying Tootsie. And the BBC producer would have said, Tootsie, would you like to come on the radio? And Tootsie would have said, yes. Then Tootsie would have been phoned back and put on to Nikki Campbell. Tootsie is a young person and I hope to be Jesus, Mary and Holy Saint Joseph and all the saints in the world, that Tootsie never becomes a carer. Listen to Tootsie.
We've got Tootsie in London. Do you mind speaking to Tootsie in
Absolutely
London?
Not.
Go on, Tootsie!
Not. Hello, Tootsie.
Natasha,
hi,
young, a young Conservative. Well, you're through to the DUP. From Jim from the DUP. What a day. Tootsie, carry on.
Well, basically, for a lot of my generation, the referendum was like our first chance in voting, and we feel like massively betrayed by all of you. Like, I don't think like any of you understand how big like a deal this is for our generation, and I just feel like a lot of people who are backing.
We feel massively betrayed by all of you that voted to leave.
We understand how big like a deal this is for our generation.
And I don't think you understand how big a deal it is for our generation, said Tootsie. And what was hilarious about that was, I swear to God, you can listen to the podcast on BBC Radio 5 Live's website. When Tootsie had finished, she was ignored. There was a 5-second pause and Campbell asked the question to somebody standing alongside him. It was fantastic. Yeah, but, no, but, yeah, but, no, but, yeah, but. Our generation, the young generation. Blame the old farts. Francis O'Grady, head of the Trades Union Congress, or the TUC as we know it. Francis had a pop at retirees too. She was on with LK Burley. Now, Francis O'Grady, Labour Party lover, was blaming London for Brexit. But Kay Burley, to her credit, said, well, no, didn't Labour strongholds vote leave as well? You'll first of all hear Kay Burley contradicting O'Grady, and then you'll hear O'Grady blame the pond-dwelling, duck-feeding, horrible mid-afternoon television-watching old people. This is Kay Burley with Francis O'Grady.
I'm wrong to surmise that it was Labour heartlands primarily that voted for us to leave the European Union, and actually it was the conurbations like London up in Scotland as well, of course, Northern Ireland, that actually voted to stay, but the Labour strongholds voted to leave, did they not?
Good girl, Kay.
I think there's... we all know there's a real division between what happened in towns and what happened in cities, and particularly what happened for different age groups.
Here we go now with blaming the old. She's ignoring Burley's question, which was, in the north, love, up north at country, right? A lot of people voted to leave, working class people, of course. Why wouldn't they? Nobody's been more destroyed by the European Union than working class people. So Burley caught her out in a pack of... well, in a load of monumental bollocks by saying that it's London and in the cities and all of that. Nonsense. And then she starts blaming the old.
With, as I say, a small but significant majority of people at work voting one way and a majority of those who are retired voting another way. But I think what's important now is how do we unite people?
Yeah, but just to clarify, pensioners' votes are just as valid, aren't they, as people who are in gainful employment? After all, they would have worked for 40, 50 years before they retire.
Good girl, Kay. That's right. Pensioners' votes are just as valid as young people. They're people too, pensioners, with all the inalienable rights that everybody else should have. Right? Bit confused here, O'Grady. What do I say?
People express their views. I think the real question is what happens if we end up in gridlock? What happens if we end up in stalemate?
Yeah, she backtracked all the way into the car park there, did Francis O'Grady. Good stuff, Kay. Kay was delighted as well today, by the way, because Sky News did a poll to see who people preferred as the next leader of the Conservative Party. So Sky've done a poll today, asked people, if you had to pick between all of the Conservative MPs, whom would you choose to be the next leader? Here's Kay with the results.
Sky Data poll just out, asking who the public would prefer to be Prime Minister when Theresa May steps down. Here we go. 20% voted for Boris Johnson, while support for Amber Rudd and Michael Gove were only in single figures, gets worse. Similarity with the Home Secretary, Sajid Javid, 8% for him. Foreign Secretary, Jeremy Hunt, 7%. None of the above, 49%. Nearly half of those asked said that the ones that are the front runners at the moment were not good enough to do the job.
because they're a shower of bastards, all of them. The public is aware of it. Anyway, let's leave Brexit. It's 18 and a half. It's 18 minutes to the top of the hour. And I'm up against it here because I've got about 15 more stories to do. Rich tweets, I'm not sure why I listened to the BBC. It's a basket case of snowflakery. Yes. Faisal tweets, I wasn't expecting that question from Kay Burley. I almost dropped me toast here too, says Faisal. Yeah, it was good stuff by Kay to get stuck into O'Grady. David tweets, it's like some desperate political factions across the pond desperately fighting a wall. Funny how all the good globalist pond filth are desperate for no borders anywhere. says David there. Hi to Busy as well. Hi to Jason, who says, Richie, as far as I'm aware, Nicky Campbell was on about £500,000 a year, but he cut his nads off before his mate Burden live on air last year when the salaries all came out, and he offered to take a cut to £300,000 a year. I vaguely remember something like that. There were a number of male presenters who offered to drop their wages, except for Chris Evans, who said, nah, you can take a run and jump. John Parsons says, how you doing, John? Richie, 39 billion quid's a lot of money. 39 billion seconds ago is almost 1,300 years ago. 39 billion quid is an awful lot of money, of course it is. And a lot could be done with that. Hi to Andy Newman. How you doing, Andy? A lot of people talking about the eco-anxiety, which is big pharma fuckery, isn't it? Let's invent an anxiety. Let's invent a psychological disorder around the fear of the effects of climate change. Let's call it eco-anxiety, and let's bring out a tablet called EcoEase. Take an EcoEase 3 times a day before meals, and you'll be okay. You won't feel so stressed about the doom that climate change spells. Hi to Susan. Hi to Hubertes, who says, Trump, Richie, is in the pocket of the synagogue of Satan. And we all know why. All aboard the Lolita Express, says Hubertes. Yes, I see where you're going there. See what you did there. Trump. Hi to Natalie Stacey. How you doing, Natalie? Yeah, you have to laugh sometimes, because I think it's a fantastic way to dispel the sadness and the despair at this agenda unfolding in front of us at a rate of knots. When you laugh at it, it goes some way, I think, to helping you deal with it and cope with it. Here's a bad story. I won't dwell too much on this because, like I said, I wanted to do an hour today. I might just run over, but I wanted to keep it to an hour because then it repeats on the hour, of course, on the website. But anyway, online child sex abuse case is overwhelming the Metropolitan Police. Online child sex abuse cases is overwhelming the Met Police. And this is, a watchdog has been looking into this. The watchdog is the HM Inspectorate of Constabulary and Fire and Rescue Services. And they've done a very extensive report and found that the Metropolitan Police is not able to provide the service that child sex abuse victims need and deserve because of staffing pressures and a backlog of cases. And they're saying that they audited 303 cases, and they found that child protection practice was only good in 93 out of 303. So that's like a third, right? And needed improvement in 127 and was totally inadequate in 83 of those cases. It said that there was limited capacity in specialist teams, backlogs of work, there was resourcing pressure, and that officers in some areas were managing more than 100 registered sex offenders each. Can you imagine that? One officer, one man, one woman, given the job of monitoring 100 registered sex offenders. It's absolutely at breaking point, right? And this explains, by the way, why we talked about 2 years ago on this programme, some police forces are going to people's houses whom they know are downloading images of children being abused. And rather than arresting them, they're asking them to accept a caution and to accept that they can't continue to do it. Which, when this broke, it drove victims absolutely mad, didn't it? And understandably. You mean to tell me you're knocking on the door and saying, hey, John, look, we understand that you've been downloading child abuse images. No, don't argue, John. We know. We've got the evidence here. Look, what we would ask you to do now, John, is give us an undertaking that you won't do it again. That's how bad things have gotten, isn't it? Why do you think police forces... And now, don't blame the police, because the police are under-resourced. Cuts have destroyed the police's ability to effectively police the country, not just in terms of child sex abuse, but in everything, in road traffic offences, in domestic violence, in murder, in knife crime. Police can't cope. And that's why you get this. Why do you think it is that the powers that be, the Home Office, why do they not prioritise protecting children? Why is it they don't prioritise giving police forces whatever they need to stop those who download, who sell, who pass on images of children being abused? Just ask yourself that. And I'm going to leave that there. It's incredible. The government is telling lies about people being in work, record numbers of people in work. This is bullshit. A lot of these jobs are zero hours contracts, really low paying jobs. It was announced today that a record 3 million children in this country are living in poverty despite the fact that their parents are actually working. How do you like them apples? Parents are not on welfare. The parents are not on benefits. They're going out and they're working, doing their best for their children, but they can't give them everything they need. 70% of all poor children were in working families last year, up from 67% on 2017. Child poverty is getting younger, with 53% of poor children aged under 5. Analysis of the statistics, which were published by the Department for Work and Pensions, shows that the high cost of housing in the UK is pushing more and more families over the poverty line. Used to be many years ago that most families were either in a council house that they could afford to rent or they had an affordable mortgage. That's the way it used to be. Now, half of young families, half of working families now, are in rented accommodation, but not renting from the council. Renting from private landlords and paying £700, £800, £900, £1,000 a month. So they've got fuck all for food, for saving, for paying bills. And they're up to their tits in debt. And of course, this is having a huge impact on the welfare of the children. It's having an enormous impact on the relationship of the couple. There's no fun there, is there? Is there? There's no fun, like, when you go home, your wife, you go home, you got nothing left. And you're wondering, are we going to have to borrow from your father again, are we? Are we? Are we going to have to go to a payday loan firm, are we? Are we? No sex there, is there? There's no intimacy, there's no love. All there is angst, bitterness that turns into arguments and aggression and eventually hatred between the couple, and they split up. That's what happens when people are poor. How do you know that? Because I grew up in poverty. And I grew up around people who lived in desperate poverty, even though their dads mostly at that time were out working. But working for pittances. So I see what it does to people. And that's what's happening. 3 million kids in poverty in this country. Lovely. Makes you proud, doesn't it? Makes you proud to be in the European Union. I'm not going to do the Huawei story, the Chinese security risks and all that garbage, because I don't have time. I want to do this story, though, because I think it's really interesting. Very, very, very interesting, this story. We don't often get to cover foosball or football on the Richie Allen Show, but there is an opportunity today. The Southampton manager is an interesting man called Ralf Hasenhüttl. Is Ralf German? Is he? Help me out here, dear listeners. I can't research it right now. Is he German or is he Austrian? Maybe he's Belgian, but I think he's German or Austrian. He's a very interesting man, very well-spoken man. The Southampton manager, Ralf Hasenhüttl. And he's been speaking to the BBC today. Well, he did a press conference as part of his weekly duties as manager of the team. And he said he's blocked the Wi-Fi at team hotels to prevent his squad from playing addictive video games. And Hasenhüttl basically said that he does have a problem with Southampton players who are addicted to video games. And he said he also had this problem at his previous club, Leipzig. And he compared it to alcohol and drug addiction. Would you like to hear a bit of the Southampton manager, Ralf Hasenhüttl? I think this guy is great. And he's talking here about how he has to deal with addiction to video games amongst his players.
Especially gaming, I think, is something you have to force active against, I think. And I will do this. I did it in my last club. We had also problems with players. They were playing until 3 o'clock in the morning in front of a game or before a game. And you have to be active and to help protect them, because it's nothing you can. It's nothing small. It's not a small problem, I think, because if you be honest, then it's the same like alcoholism or getting addicted to drugs or something like that. It's something you get addicted to, and that means you have to protect the players. It's something we have to do as a club, also to the to protect them means help them to not to spend so much time there. And as long as it's not officially for the government an illness, then we have to protect them in our way. Yeah? Because if it would be an illness, that would be easy to say for the government. The companies have to give a block after 3 hours, for example, that they can't play this game anymore. And after 3 hours, if it's finished, and then it's 20 hours blocked, then we don't have to do this. Otherwise, you see, we block the Wi-Fi in the hotel, for example, in the evening, so that they can't play anymore. I will be active always in this direction, because my point is I have to protect them, and I have to protect them also not on the pitch only, because also outside the pitch, and that means 24 hours I have to look at them, and that's what I will do.
Amazing, really, isn't it? By the way, I've been told by several people he's Austrian Ralf Hasenhüttl. Because on Thursday last, the Sun newspaper, which I don't read, and nobody should read it, in the northwest of England, the Sun, the legacy of Hillsborough, of course, we should never read the Sun. Although we should never tell anybody else what to do. If you want to read the Sun, read the Sun. I choose not to read it. But anyway, according to the BBC, last Thursday, a football player who remains anonymous gave, a Premier League footballer, gave an interview to the Sun and said that spending time on gaming sessions has basically threatened his career. In fact, he's not a Premier League player, he's an EFL player, so he could be in the Championship or in League One or League Two. He said he plays the game Fortnite for up to 13 hours a day. It's amazing, isn't it? You know, the Radiological Society of North America looked into this last year, and they found that the more young men play games, and particularly the younger they are, the more they tend towards impulsivity. Or simply put, they lose the ability to control their impulses, including negative impulses, when they're not playing. It's a very worrying thing for parents with young boys. It does have an impact on young girls, but not in quite the same way, apparently. When young boys play it, it basically erases their ability to control their impulses. And again, great researchers, including people who've been on this programme over the last 5 years or so, and even going back to my previous programmes, have said this is all part of an overarching plan, messing with the minds of children. That's what it's doing. And here you have a Premier League manager, whose press conferences are very interesting, by the way. I'm a football fan, as you know. You know, I watch a lot of Premier League and Championship football, and I see this guy, he seems to be a very cerebral character, and he's saying that it's so bad amongst his players, and he's got a young squad, that he's got to turn the Wi-Fi off in the hotel. Amazing. These are amazing times. I'm going to love you and leave you today, dear listener, and thanks for tuning in today. Patricia, by the way, with a very interesting point there. There will come a time when most of these players will thank this man, their manager. I hope so, Patricia. Really appreciate that. Murray tweets, how you doing, Murray? A great many buy-to-rent houses are ex-council properties. That's right. Selling off the family silver, as my mate Michael Cohen mentions to me. Thatcher was told, you shouldn't be doing that. You're selling off the family silver. You know, first of all, those houses were state assets. Second of all, they were important because people who couldn't afford to buy didn't have to worry about being homeless. And people who couldn't afford to rent from extortionate private landlords knew that they could get a council house and pay what they could afford to pay and have a life. So giving the tenants of those council houses the right to buy their own council houses seemed and sounded like a wonderfully benevolent thing to do, but it was the devil incarnate. And again, I'm not going to dwell on that because I've talked about that so many times on the programme in the past. Thank you for your company this week. We've had some terrific guests, haven't we? Coming up on the programme next week, Jake Morfonios. Is it Morfonios or Morfonios? I've been in touch with Jake. I must ask him how to pronounce his surname. He'll be Blackstone Intelligence. Jake will be on the programme. And I'll also be talking with Dr. Chris Busby. I've asked Chris to think about 5G and to come on the programme and give me an academic assessment of 5G rollout and all of that. So Chris Busby, Jake Morfonios, I'll have plenty more guests on for you next week. But of course, I will be speaking with you long before that, because Sunday View will be live as usual on Sunday morning at 11 a.m. UK time, 11 a.m. British summer time, because the clocks go forward on Saturday by an hour. So I'll be talking with you on British summer time Sunday morning at 11 a.m. Until then, look after yourselves and one another, and thank you for supporting The Richie Allen Show. Go to richieallen.co.uk to make a donation. Every little does help.